Blog Talk Radio.
We've got film. We've got psychology. We put the two of those together and we've got filmcology. We're going to take an hour or so to take a look at the characters and the events that are surrounding them and see if maybe there might be something there we can use to apply in our own lives. So join me and let's jump on in.
Hello, everybody. And this was one wonderful movie. I have read some of the reviews. They sort of panned the movie in just ridiculous ways. But don't rely on reviews. Rely on the context of the movie, what's being said. And actually, if you look at the psychology of this that's going on within the characters of this film, you'll find that it's clearly, in my mind, a five-star movie. It's a five-star movie because the interactions between those people are brilliant, and most of it is so understated that it often doesn't feel like a comedy until you hear those under-the-breath quips that are being bandied about between the three main characters and basically everyone else. So, Stand Up Guys is about a gentleman who's gone to prison for something, and he keeps his mouth shut, like gangsters who are supposed to be stand-up guys do. And his best friend, who is there to meet him when he's finally released from his entire bid of 28 years. And the hijinks that happen between that moment he's released from prison until about 24 hours later. So let's get started with the show. I'm going to unmute the people that are calling in, and I'll just be talking, and you just go ahead and jump in where you feel like you'd like to. I'm going to start out with some common themes. And okay, hold on a second.
Hello?
Okay, hi. So area code 303 is on, and so is 253. So,
hi, here. Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Is this Lydia?
I'm not even sure
it
people
is.
Even realize who Fisher Stevens is. When he was younger, he was actually an actor. You saw him more often as an actor in a lot of John Hughes-type kind of films and stuff like that, but brilliant direction, I think, for the film. And it asks the question about what would you do if you're faced with your life or your best friend's life and the possibility of your family's life also being affected. So the character who's driving this whole thing is person is played by, I'm trying to think of his name straight up. I'll get it here in just a moment. But anyway, the main gangster, the man who's put this awful challenge on Christopher Walken's character to kill his best friend. The main head guy is what we would call in psychology narcissistic, because what he does to other people, he just can't seem to accept anybody doing to him. And most narcissistic people have some kind of weird, spoiled nature. But so this is what's driving this whole film, how everything happened, to the point where this man actually has been sitting on wanting to do damage for 28 years. So, Now, you have to ask yourself, would you do that for your friend? Would you? Would you stand up for your friend? It's not just, it's a whole gangster thing, but would you stand up for your friend over your own life? And it's interesting the way they do the twists and turns throughout the film as far as where things are going. Christopher Walken is a perfect person to play deadpan. You're not really sure where his head's at. I mean, you look at Christopher Walken's face, and you don't know if he's got a joke for you or a gun or a knife or if he's a homicidal maniac. You have no idea, because he's one of those brilliant actors that gives you just enough to keep you guessing. He's just a brilliant character actor and beyond. So then there's Al Pacino, who pretty much is maneuvering his normal demeanor of sort of sucking and jiving and, you know, going by the seat of his pants. And then there's the absolutely I adore all these guys, Alan Arkin. Alan Arkin,
you know,
if we think about it, all three of these guys do sort of the same thing in their acting prowess. They can do comedy. They can do horror. They can do it all. And it's always believable. Always believable.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to ask you, there's two ladies on the phone, and I'm going to ask you just a quick question. When it comes to, which was figured into this movie, about the sleeping arrangements with the prostitutes or the ladies of the evening, however you want to call them, I mean, do you really think that any of these guys, you'd be, like, willing to jump for that or not? It's a little indirect, but I'm just kind of curious.
I'd be willing to what for them?
Jump. You know, the between the sheets, you know, horizontal block. Okay, let me put it this way. If you were presented with one of these three guys in this situation, would you say yes, I'd go ahead and go with that? And what would make you decide to go with that? What?
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. I would, just for the fact it'd be fun. Hey, to be with an older gentleman, I mean, and he's been locked up for years, come on. He's like a diamond coming out. Yeah. That'd probably be the best piece I've ever had in my life.
I love the comment. It was so hard I could cut a diamond with it. I nearly busted a gut on that one. I thought that was hilarious.
Oh yeah, and it was really perfect when Alan Arkin came down and the women were just going up nuts over him, and they just they were just so sure he wasn't just going to be able to make it. You know,
right.
Be easy on him.
I know.
But, yeah.
And
I don't know what he did.
Call me. They're saying, call me. I wonder what he did.
That
kind of piqued
perfect.
My interest. Yeah.
Well, what's interesting about this from a psychological point of view is the way women tend to be versus the way men tend to be, the gender differences. Here's a situation where your buddy gets out, your best friend gets out. Of course he wants to get laid, and there's no question about it. I mean, a guy would be willing to just kind of sit there and wait for you to, you know, get the deed done or figure out a way to, I mean, you're going to break into a store just to make sure this guy has boner pills, as they call them, to make sure he can get the deed done. And I love that one little interplay where he hands him the pills, and Al Pacino just opens it and starts downing the pills, and Christopher just sort of like nonchalantly says, I think you're supposed to only take one. I mean, he doesn't even pay any attention anymore. He doesn't even really care. And it's like Al Pacino's like, well, I just, you know, need to make sure. And he swings some more.
I know. But it was from their years of relationship. But he knew that he was going to do what he wanted.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
If he said, I think you should just take one, he's like, he knows, you know, because then he starts snorting all of his prescriptions.
Oh, yeah, later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seeing if he could get high. I thought the most touching thing was when he paid that woman to dance with him. he just wanted to be held.
That was so touching. Oh.
It was so beautiful.
Yeah.
And it is, to me, that is just something that a lot of our elderly don't get enough touch. A lot of us don't get enough touch, but the elderly don't, and he didn't in jail. But, I just thought that was so beautiful, and he danced magnificently.
Yes, he did. Well, you know, he was good.
As we know, he can do after scent of a woman. We know.
Yeah,
this man.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah. Couple of dancers in there. I mean, Christopher Walken, he's definitely a well-trained dancer, but, he did a few shuffles in this, but he didn't go into the dancing, yeah. Yeah, that was very sweet. I was so glad that she stood up and they allowed that, because it's, I think that most women have a soft spot in their heart for older men the way they do for dogs and kittens. You know, I'm not trying to put them down. It's just that, my grandfather, I just think he was adorable, even though he was cantankerous old coot, and I would call him that. But I just adored him. And to the day he died, when I greeted grandfather, it was on the lips. He was just...
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could have just been a fly in the wall when he was a young man, being as dastardly as he was to the women in his life. That's all I can say. So, because my dad, my grandfather, and I dare say probably my brother in that particular lineage, not so easy on women. And I told both my grandfather and my dad, and they're kind of like stand-up guys. These guys were just, oh, my goodness. And I said to both of them, I love you. I love you both so much. But I pray to God that he doesn't send any men like you my way. And they both started laughing and cackling just like the guys in this show. So it's a different generation, how they handle relationships, what they think is fair play and isn't fair play. But the thing I meant to get to is this. How many of us would actually go to a place where our girlfriends can get their rocks off with some guy and just sit out in the lobby just waiting for them to get done? I don't know many women that would do that.
Why? I've done it.
In my gambling days,
and my girlfriend, she did her little stuff in the back room. I didn't do that. I gambled and played with the dice.
But we're not talking about that.
Things.
This is a slightly different atmosphere and situation where
gone
somewhere specifically to get pleased by the person. And the person is waiting in the waiting room like the doctor's office for you to get done with your appointment.
Well, you just might. I would. If that's what she needed, I don't know of a place where women can go for that kind of thing. And women are different than men. We're different animals. And I think women would crave more being held and dancing than actual sex acts. I mean that's where I believe a lot of us are different. I'm not saying all men or all women are either way, because I'll be proven wrong, but I do believe that a lot of people are, I just don't see that with women. But if that's what she needed and I could wait for her, I mean, there's no doubt about it, I'd do it.
I wouldn't
like
want
one is because being around those men, number one, there is the I don't want to say the luxury, that isn't the word, but the persona. They're, that they're mob guys or maid guys, right? But there's that little curiosity. And then also there are older gentlemen, so you don't feel as opposed to someone around your age or younger. You know what I mean? You feel safer that you're around older gentlemen. He's experienced. He's going to talk to you with some sense. and make you laugh because, you know, old school, they always come up with some lines or words, just like Al Pacino did with those girls, had them laughing. Well, that relaxed them, too, even though they're like, okay, we're going to do this to, you know, help the guy out. But also, it was fun. They enjoyed him. Now, they may not get that same assurance if they were with somebody around their age or a little younger, you know. So I don't know. I think for a woman with an older man, it brings in the father thing, you know. But also, you just you feel safer. I would. I mean, to me, so I've always liked older men compared to young men. That's just my choice in life. But I just felt safer, and the conversation was different, you know, more intellectual. You could talk about things. In other words, instead of a happy meal, I got a full meal.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that. No happy meals for me. I want the full, seven courses. Thank you very much.
Well,
I'd
hey,
have told
I'm
Al Pacino. I'd have straightened up all of them aches and pains. Come on up here to the.
You might have actually helped his priapism pretty quickly, huh? That was, you know, that's just all that eternal erection that, you know, seems like it's great to men until it doesn't go down for like 4, 5, 6 hours.
Oh, it sounds terrible.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I for one, am just extremely attracted to older men. I know in psychology they say it's a father complex, but hey, I don't need anyone to replace my dad, and I don't want anyone talking to me like they're my dad. I just have a real thing for basically the things Linus is talking about, experience and knowing what you're doing. And there used to be a saying, Linus or Lydia, you guys might be able to help me with this. There was a saying that I used to hear all the time when I was a kid. You can be treated like a queen with an older man or treated like a... the saying had something to do with you're either going to be treated better with an older man or you're going to be with the younger man and treated like dirt. And obviously that's not the case because there are a lot of women who date younger men or marry younger men and they have, you know, they're blessed enough to get somebody with the maturity older than them.
Looking for.
Yeah, and there's probably older men that are immature too, so... You never make blanket statements, you know.
Yes.
Blanket statements will you'll always find exceptions to them. But, you know, I used to like old, you know, a guy that was a few years older than me at least until I met my husband. So, you know, and he convinced me to, you know, to date someone younger, and I'm glad I did. Because I think it works out really well with women. But, okay, we're not talking about that. We are talking about the older man, and I think there is also with women or men, as we age, there is a confidence, and I think that is very attractive. And all those men were confident. Now Christopher Walken just seemed to not want much to do with the opposite sex all that much, you know. You know, as far as a love interest, and it could have been his health problems, I don't know. But the other two, they definitely enjoyed female company. And the one, Alan Arkin, missed his wife so much. That was so touching.
Yeah.
Yes, that was touching, whereas it's just like he felt guilty, and they're like, wait, you've been gone for, and he goes, we're married for 4 years. You know, it's not going to go in 5 minutes. That guilt. Which was just absolutely sweet, but I would just like to address, you know, one thing. Like, it's sort of a throwback to what you were saying earlier about women tend to want to be cuddled or dance and be close. Myself personally, and I don't know what's got me this way. I think I was this way from when I started my sexual activity. Yes, I've had sex. I'm 50 years old. Okay, so when I started with sex, for me, it was really the act. I really was into the act, the way it felt. And I'm, you know, cuddling and all that, that's really nice. But I was never one of those kind of women. I don't think that I'm not tentative and things like that, but I just, and I was accused by many people I worked with and many women that I'm too much like men. I can't say if it's because they had three older brothers. I really can't really tell you other than it's real easy for me to separate a lot like men. Sex can just be sex for me, and I don't, I'm not supporting that or denigrating it either way. Whatever
yeah,
way that you
I wouldn't either, although I'm probably more emotional when it comes to sex. I mean, I like the act, but I want the emotions of love and caring and all of that. Conversation, you know, all of that. Touching. But, you know, in when I was younger, I mean, I loved the act, but, you know, I was married. I was pretty monogamous when I was in relationships, so I've only had a few relationships.
Yeah, that's a hard thing for me. I think that it just slightly different. It would have been real easy for me to do a bunny ranch, because I think it would have been just intriguing to see what would come through the door and the way people are in that level. But I think that's why I'm in psychology. Because, you know, the way people are and their motivations. So, but, okay, on top of that, I also wanted to tag on to when Lydia was talking about the Christopher Walken character. What probably gets, probably many people don't really think about so much because they didn't go on and on about it at length. This guy was told when his best friend went into prison that he had to kill his best friend when he got out 28 years later, or he would be killed, or possibly his family. So he's all these 28 years, that guilt and that oppressive weight has been on his mind when he's sending care packages to his best friend. He's stayed in contact with his best friend all that time. That he can't say to his best friend. And I just think that that had moved his whole frame of thinking. So his escape, he's essentially in prison just like his best friend. And his escape was painting. Just like Al Pacino's character said, your paintings meant so much to me. You know, I would just look at that sunset. And and then when we find out later, those paintings were Christopher looking at his granddaughter. It's almost like getting out of prison was recognizing that she's out there and she's this great person, and that's how he was released. So I would think that he probably would have thought more about women if he didn't have that wealth of love for his granddaughter. And that oppressive background of knowing what he's had to live with for 28 years, knowing as soon as he picked up his best friend, he had to kill him.
Well,
so,
and don't you think that Al Pacino knew that he was going to kill him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think
you
Al Pacino figured it out. I don't know if he knew it the whole 28 years he was in prison. He might have figured it out at some point when he was in prison, but...
Well, he also said, you know, for years he was looking around in prison. So at some point I think he realized it was going to happen after prison. But I don't know.
Oh, yeah. And that clearly narcissistic behavior towards Al Pacino's character. He wants to watch him rot in prison.
Right.
Then get out and ruin his life further.
Right.
By having his best friend do it.
Right,
you
and I felt like it was very, I forgot who brought it up in the movie, but he said, you know, well, he let him go to the job. That's how he got killed. You know, the father let his own son go on a job, you know, and, you know, so clearly narcissistic, not taking any responsibility that, you know, he had a hand in his son's death.
Right, exactly, and that's basically what Al Pacino's character, he was the mouthpiece of truth the whole time throughout the movie. You know, you know it's you. Tell me it's you. Just come on out and say it's you. And the other thing, he was the one that said what you were talking about, Lydia. He was the one who said, you know, this guy is just pissed off because he can't get over, you know, the consequences of what he did. You know,
right.
So, you know, you sent your son in to die. Nobody else did.
Yeah.
So, so what happens with when narcissistic people are in your life? Usually, it doesn't. You know, things get really out of balance quickly. And and there's all these different variations of narcissism. Probably at times, I can't really say. There's probably times when people do. I think narcissism is in and unto itself, generally couched in with one person. I don't think we all go through narcissistic tendencies. I think you've got narcissism going on, or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So, So anyway, we have this whole thing with these friends and the last hurrah. I absolutely love the last hurrah. The whole thing. The whole thing was sweet. It was just absolutely sweet.
It made me want to have a plan with a girlfriend. It reminded me of like an older and male version of Thelma and Louise. A little bit. You know?
It felt like
these guys were buddies and, you know, and they brought their other buddy in. They rescued him from the nursing home. I love it. You know, I nearly cried because, you know, Al Pacino, you know, talking to him, and she goes, "Are you here to rescue him?" And, you know, and he's like, "Yeah." And she's like, "Well, would someone rescue me?" or something like that. And, you know, and I cried a little bit, you know, because those places are awful. And, you know, I mean, I'd love to go on a spree, but, you know, like in a really good way. You know, I wouldn't want to kill anyone, but I wouldn't mind, you know, going on a joyride or something and just being, you know, just, I don't know. I'd rather go on my own terms than not, you know, than wasting away in a nursing home or anything like that. It's just who I am. So that the movie just appealed to me more than I thought it was going to.
Oh yeah, it was. And I love the chivalry too. How this woman, poor store owner, when he knocks him out to steal his clothes. I mean, even thinking about the confessional scene where he's telling the priest, is like, well, okay, he said 60 years, he hadn't had a confession, and then he goes, okay, well, start by telling me the worst of the things, and it's like, I'd be here all day. You know, how about we just do what happened today? In this with the Hail Mary and call it a day, and he's like, "Well, I don't think that's really going to cover it."
Right.
And then you're giving a tip, priest. I just thought, oh, that's classic. Classic.
It was classic. It was so classic. I, you know, being a next Catholic, I nearly peed my pants. You know, all the stuff he said. Yeah, that was funny. And I did. I love the chivalry of them rescuing that woman. And, you know, it's like, you know, they had a code, you know. I think in the old day with, you know, with gangsters, I think that there was things they did and there's things they didn't do. But, you know, hurting somebody, you know, needlessly, that they didn't do that stuff. And that this woman got kidnapped and, you know, raped and tortured, that was, you know, they're just like, okay, we're going to right that wrong. We can do that. And I started feeling at that point in the movie that they both knew what was up. You know, Christopher Walken and Alan Arkin, not Alan Arkin, Al Pacino knew, you know, let's do some good things and leave, you know, and go out with a bang or whatever.
Well, my father is about the age of these guys. And it is interesting, the generational eras that hearken for this. My father was one of those guys, and his friends, there were certain things you just didn't do. I mean, I remember my dad being upset because there was a older gentleman that it was indirectly related to our family, but he kept having my sister come over and do things for him. So he would pay my sister some money to come over and help him with this or that. And my dad said, I don't think that's right. He just said it like Frank Sinatra might say it. I don't think that's right. He's too old for her, and he needs to stop trying to mess around with her. And I said, Dad, I don't think that there's anything. And he goes, he knows something's not right with that. There's something not right with it. And my sister didn't really get it. She goes, I don't know why Dad doesn't like it. And it's like, I think those kind of guys, I mean, maybe you guys give me your way in, they kind of have a sixth sense about when somebody's not up to par. Yeah.
No matter what Al Pacino was, he was not, I think he truly liked women. You know, I think he liked women. And I think that him and Christopher Walken, especially, and Alan Arkin, who was married for 40 years, they liked women. They weren't going to treat any woman poorly.
Yeah. And, yeah, 30 years ago, things were a little bit different with the way women came at you. The other thing is, when someone goes to prison, it's a lot like someone who's an alcoholic. You're locked up, and time is passing beyond you. When you get out, then you're still at the time as when you got in. That's one of the things you hear all the time from alcoholics who have been alcoholics for many years or who have been in prison. And they're still thinking in terms of an 18-year-old mind or a 25-year-old mind. They're not thinking that they're a senior citizen because they're still waiting to live their life back from where it ended. Or they were sort of asleep. That's the other thing alcoholics have told me. They felt like they were asleep for like 10 years, and they woke up, and no time had changed.
Well, Al Pacino was amazed at the car. You know, how do I start it?
That was a great one. I mean, it's just the whole thing about the arrogance of leaving your car unlocked, because nobody's going to do it because you think you're all that. Yeah. Yeah.
And leaving the key in it, too.
It was just a brilliant movie. And the other thing is our grandparents, you know. I think that as grandparents, anything that you think that you may have done wrong, it's almost like your offer at a second chance. What do you guys think?
Oh, yeah.
It's almost like it's your redemption. A grandchild easily could be seen as redemption for people.
And she was so sweet, too.
Yeah.
You know? He told her he couldn't find her, but then he had found her all along. And, you know, and she kind of knew. Now, that's something I kind of missed near the end. I know he wrote the letter for her, but did she know he was the grandfather?
He explained in his letter that he was her grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
So when they had the conversation at the end, when he called her to make sure she got what he'd left her, the apartment that was paid up for a year and all the money he had in the world, she called him. She said something like, "This is more than I need, grandfather," or something like that.
Right.
So she acknowledged that was her grandfather, and she was crying because. And then she asked, "When will I see you again?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said he didn't know. So.
And you know, they did leave it so that you don't know if they actually died.
Yeah, just like Thelma and Louise. I mean. Technically, you know, they died, but it's kind of like you don't have to see the ugly ending. You just get to use your imagination however you choose to take it.
I see him making a number two. stand-up guy's number two. No, I'm teasing. But that's the way I choose to see it in my mind.
So this film has a lot to do with redemption, a lot, the psychological aspects of redemption and friendship.
Friendship, yeah.
Trying to say it, the word is ethics. That I think that sounds really funny when somebody talks ethics or doing the right thing when you're dealing with criminals and gangsters. But it's that old thing where they used to say there's a code, there's a certain code or something among criminals. It's sort of like the police officers have a certain code, or there's the professional code between doctors.
And nurses.
Right. So I think that no matter who you are, there is something there. And the ones that, you know, rock the boat are the ones that don't honor it. I thought, now, Lennis, you used to pay attention to Gandolfini, what's his name? You know,
The Sopranos.
The Sopranos.
Yeah,
right.
The Sopranos.
And so wasn't there some kind of code where you don't touch family, you leave family alone or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And narcissistic guy in here completely obliterated that. See? Yeah, completely obliterated. He's already threatening to take out the granddaughter. I really don't even think he knew that was his granddaughter, because he just said, he called her a sweet, hot thing, which I don't think he would have said if he had understood that was Christopher's granddaughter.
Oh, no, I thought he did.
Now, I watched that scene a couple of times, and I was trying to figure, but it's not clear. What is clear is that he's aware that this guy goes there every day, and he likes this girl. That is one thing that's clear to him. But and he just said, you know, accidents happen. But if he really wanted to cut into him, I think he would have said, my son can't come back, you know, why should your granddaughter live?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't. So, but there was a lot of understated stuff in here, a lot of understated stuff.
Definitely.
So,
how about the eulogy that Al Pacino gave for Alan Arkin?
Oh, her Hirsch, yes.
Yes, Hirsch.
I just thought that was really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
It was really,
and they buried
sweet.
Him. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, another thing that this movie tells us that is really hard for most of us to take is people who do bad things aren't necessarily bad people.
Right.
And that's hard to reconcile. You guys, I'm sure, have had some kind of experiences like that. You had experience with somebody that you really adored or you liked, but you found out that they did bad things?
Like my first husband?
Oh, okay.
I have had experience with that. People that do bad things, they're not necessarily bad.
And it's hard to reconcile. That is a real difficult thing, psychologically.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I just was going to say I'm of the mind, judge not lest ye be judged. I mean, that might not mean that I want a relationship with you, but that I definitely, I don't know. I just can't, I try not to judge people from what they do. I mean, like I said, though, I may not want to hang out with them, but I try not to judge them. It's not my job.
Well, for instance, my grandfather, this is my paternal side. When I'm talking about my grandfather right now, it's my paternal side, not my maternal side, but my paternal grandfather, he talked about some of his experiences with his other wives, other than my grandmother, and I was horrified some of the things he talked about, and now if some guy had told me he did that to a woman today, I'd want to deck him. But I could not help but love my grandfather. I just thought my grandfather was cantankerous, and you know, he would act all gruff and all that, but I just adored him. It to the point where now grumpy people just immediately hearken to my grandfather, and I immediately like him. I don't know what it is. I've been at work, Metro, where I worked at Metro, and there was a safety guy who was really gruff and sort of nasty. Everyone was sort of afraid of him, and I just started calling him nicknames, like Grumpus or whatever, and I said, yeah, Grumpus with da-da-da, I don't. And somebody found out that I called him that. So I can't believe you call him that. It's like, well, what's he gonna do? Beat me up? And my grandfather passed this love to me, where I just have no fear. I mean, I always invade their personal space. If I meet a grumpy person, it wouldn't dawn on me to not touch their face or hug them. They kind of like cats. Go to people that don't like cats, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's just something about that. I guess one of the things I was thinking when I watched this film is, hey, bad characters need love too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, when I was young, I hung out with a group of guys and girls. But we were kind of a gang, very lightweight by today's standards. I lived in Chicago, and we had a little bit of a gang. And the guys did some not-so-good things. Of course, like, they didn't run around with guns or anything, but they beat people up. And, people that asked for it or people in opposing, I'll put that in quotes, air quotes, gangs. But I loved all those guys, and I still love them. And most of them that made it through those years are amazing men, fathers, husbands, really, really amazing people. And I love them. And plus, they're funny as heck.
Yeah.
I love to laugh, and these guys are, you know, they're funny. They're still funny.
So I guess it's agreed that we all would very easily love the gangsters.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Goodness. But I don't think that this movie is supporting the gangster life. I mean, they brilliantly show that there's complications that might make your life less than, you know, pleasant.
Yeah, prison
But they
time.
Do it... They do it without all the gore, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Even the nut cracking that was done by the girl that was raped and abused.
Yeah. I love that. I just loved it. I loved it. I was just like, oh, yeah. It was so awesome when she's like, well, I'm coming. And he goes, well, okay, then wait 10 minutes, you know. And then they're like, you got 8 minutes. She's like, I bet she got it done in 4.
And Al Capone, he said to the priest that he set a woman free, or freed her from her, you
know,
freed her from her life, whatever. And that was huge.
Yes,
because women who have been raped or who have been tortured or abused by some guy, or you know, whoever you are, if you had experienced child abuse or you were, you know, just tortured by a teacher who just didn't like your looks or your older brother or sister, to have the ability to actually give payback on the spot is brilliant. And it does, as Al Pacino said, the truth sayer in this movie, it freed her. He freed her life.
Yeah.
So she's not going to have to go years and years with all this weighing on her and just, you know, bawling over and over because I was raped and there was no resolution. And, you know, because resolution is what we're all after, isn't it, when somebody harms us in such a manner?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
And quite honestly, we see some resolution at the end. I mean, at the end, we're all hating this clap hands dude. We totally were hating him. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's a perfect movie. I don't really like to review movies because I believe that, you know, movies speak to you for different reasons. And
exactly.
Either warn you or help you or lift your spirits or as Lydia has expressed before, they're cathartic. They allow you to cry so that you can kind of get that out. So, you know, movies don't have to be quote-unquote blockbusters or have to be some it doesn't have to be Citizen Kane for it to be viable.
Right.
It can
you
be
know,
just a really stupid, silly movie, but what it does for you, if it does something for you, then that makes it a great movie no matter what.
And I frequently disregard reviewers because I'd hate to be a reviewer. In fact, I went to a couple plays with a reviewer once, and I felt sorry for her because she really had to pick things apart. And I said, you know, when I go or watch something, I said, I do it to be entertained. And, you know, and for me, I'm weird. You know, even if I cry, that's entertaining. I mean, it's cathartic and that helps me. I like it. And I would hate to be a reviewer and have to, you know, see every, you know, just be nitpick it. I don't really see that. I'm not a nitpicky person, and I could, well, so therefore I probably couldn't be a reviewer. But I frequently watch movies that reviewers don't like, especially if I like the actors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Because I want to see what they're in. I just want to see what, you know, I want to see them shake their actor's legs or, you know, just try on another part. I want to see it. I'd see Meryl Streep in anything.
Meryl Streep?
Yeah, I'd see her
okay.
in anything.
Okay, see, Christopher Walken, I would want to see just about anything.
And Al Pacino.
I know.
And
I know.
Al Pacino, I do on Al Pacino.
I was going to say, Al Pacino, how was even going to say it for you? She's
mm-hmm.
Al Pacino all the way. She got her little Italian hankering.
Yeah,
I shouldn't say it's little.
I fell in love with him when I saw The Godfather.
That's
what made me really fall in love with Italian men, was because of Al Pacino,
And Scent of a Woman, oh, my God. Oh, I loved him, too.
Mm. Oh, yeah, he was adorable.
Yeah,
cranky, cantankerous.
And Christopher Walken, you know, I worked with a friend, and her boyfriend were watching all the Christopher Walken movies. They were going through them. There's a lot of them.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I seek them out.
mm-hmm.
I seek them out. It doesn't matter. His voice, I just absolutely adore him and his mannerism. But I when I say I'm in love with him, I don't think about him in a romantic way, but I'd love to dance with them, and I'm not a dancer. And I definitely don't have dancing abilities like other people, but yeah, I'd love to hug him and sniff his neck and just, I think he's adorable.
I like him.
But
I
knew Al Pacino. Lennis, see, Godfather to me, for me it was Robert De Niro, and my sweetie kind of reminds me of Robert De Niro. But after him, I think that I've had my fill of Italians. Excuse me, as he corrects me all the time, Sicilians.
Sicilians.
Since he's 100%.
And it's
there's a difference.
There is a difference. He's right. There's a difference between Sicilian and Italian.
Yeah.
After 14
years,
I've heard enough of that.
Come back to the mainland. You'll see.
Oh, man, the stories I have to listen to with that. And the only way, the quickest way to get somebody like that upset is to mispronounce an Italian word, like manicotti. That's wrong. It's manigotti. Manigotti.
Oh, manigotti. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my gosh. So when I'm really, you know, kind of peeved at him, I say ricotta and manicotti. Yeah. So, stand-up guys, this was a great, great film. Please get out and take a look at it. There's just wonderful characters and understatements. I love the whole thing with the women in the house for the ladies of the evening, or is the little brothel. That's it, the little brothel.
Mm-hmm.
Totally wonderful, yeah. The brothel. The whole thing about the food, even, when Al Pacino, he wants all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing his Last Supper. Surf and turf.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he was funny.
What?
Yeah, that. And then the breakfast, she goes, you're hungry. And he goes, well, I'm going on a long trip.
Okay, favorite quotes from the movie. I'm going to say one right now. Okay, it was like, we're either going to kick some ass or chew some gum. And then Christopher Walken's like, and I'm fresh out of gum. So, anyone else? Another quote?
Well, mine was, it's so hard I could cut a diamond.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That. Yeah, I agree with Lydia. That.
No. Now, I wrote some down, but I'm not where my notes are. But I had some, in fact, I'm going to have to watch the movie again so that I can get a Christopher Walken voice. I think I can mimic his voice a little bit. I do. And so I'm gonna practice it, and I'll spring it on you sometime.
Oh,
okay.
He's... Yeah, when they went into the store, I was thinking, you know, when they're breaking into all these places, I'm thinking, Lord, they have the keys to the city. They're just like, I thought you were retired. Well, you know, I just couldn't give away all these tools. You know, some tools you just can't get away from. And I'm thinking,
right.
And they just walk in nonchalant, break in, rip out the alarm, go about it, like other people would walk into a store and go shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And when they switched to their suits, did you guys all go, oh?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were looking hot.
Yeah, they were. They were looking damn good.
I didn't even know that Christopher Walken was 6 feet two, but it's pretty obvious next to Al Pacino. But that little man, Al Pacino, come on. The power
in
that guy's little finger... Ever since any of us saw Dog Day Afternoon, come on. Al Pacino, he doesn't even have short man syndrome. I just don't even know if the guy realizes he's not 10 feet tall.
I don't think it matters to him.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
He's one heck of a presence.
Yeah, they're bigger than their size.
Mm-hmm. Him and Robert De Niro.
That was great.
Yeah,
that was great.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing that I will say this, that feel like you still got it. Every time each one of them got to something, it's like, I still got it. He goes, hey, that was pretty good. He goes, yeah. He goes, it's like old times. And
I loved it when he goes, yeah, when he punched the one guy and the guy goes, good punch. And he goes, yeah, but I didn't get my hips in there. So then the next time when he punches the guy, he goes, yeah, I got my hips in there.
It's totally adorable.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to see this movie. I'd love to be in the background and watch and observe a room of guys watching it. And I'd love to be in the background and see a room of women watching it. Because I can see this movie being inspirational to guys. Like, you know, no matter what, we're not going out like that. We've still got it. You know, all those different thematic things that are so macho, even though they were more than macho. They were sweet.
Yeah, it empowered me. I I just really liked it. I really liked it a lot. Like I said, I wanted to get together with someone and steal a car or do something illegal. I live in Boulder, Colorado. I wanted to go to a legal pot shop, you know. If I'd had a girlfriend yesterday, I would have done something, you know. I mean, that wasn't illegal, but I was like, I was itching to do something to affirm my life, to affirm that I was alive. That's, to me, that movie was life-affirming. You know, they may have been old, they may have had to take boner pills, but they were alive, and, you know, that 24 hours, he packed a lot in 24 hours.
Right, yeah. And you know, and he could have killed them so many times.
Mm-hmm.
He could have killed them so many times. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because the opportunity definitely was there, no doubt. Yep.
Oh, yeah, when he had fallen asleep after the good,
right.
you know, rolling hay. And every step is just, every step it was just, yeah. So, but
so
I want to thank you
week?
Ladies for coming on. We have 4 minutes left.
Okay, I'm going to go, and
okay.
I will be listening.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, lady, I'll see you Saturday, girl.
Okay,
I'll be
thank
jamming
you.
Tomorrow.
All right. Okay, we'll see you,
Lydia.
Ladies.
Lydia,
yeah.
I don't even know what your show's about on
baby
Saturday.
Step. Baby
Steps. Oh, Baby
Steps.
Step. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Lydia stepped out. We have a couple of minutes, and for people to stick with our Essence of Success Radio Network, tomorrow we have Lennis's Friday Traffic Jam. That's starting at Lennis. I'm going to let you talk about this because I am not great on the schedule.
3:00 Pacific Standard Time or 6:00 Eastern Time. And it'll be from 3 to 3:30. And I'm going to get you home with a smile on your face and love in your heart. And
hello.
We're going to jam.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard your jams. I think they're really good. I wish that I had a job to come home from. I would actually like that. Since your first show, as soon as I heard that, you know, man, you know, am. Like, oh, yeah, you had some great cuts. Smooth, romantic, a little upbeat, a little funny. It was good. It's a good way to go home, folks. So we have the traffic jam coming up on Friday. Lydia will be with us, or we will be listening to Lydia on her show on Saturday at, it's 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and 3 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. And her show is A Time to Love will be about baby steps.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I love it. I'm a person who needs a lot of baby steps. I really do. I trip up quite a bit. And then this weekend after Saturday, we go to Sunday, and Lennis is going to have things just a little, she's going to shake things up a little bit on Sunday because we have the playoff games for Seattle and 49ers the football games are coming up, but let us go ahead and tell us about Sunday's show and the changes.
Okay, Sunday's show is going to be about civil rights. Where are we today at 2014? So I definitely want a lot of people to call in. I don't care who you are, religion or race, because civil rights affects us all. So I'm just curious, where do you see civil rights at right now, or the direction that it's going? And then this show, only this Sunday, because of the games, it's going to be on at 1:00 instead of 3:00. So it's going to be on 2 hours early and off at 2. Why? Because, like Brenda said, the Seahawks come on at 3:00, and I want to see my team. They are going to win. Y'all know that, don't you? I'm sorry, 49ers. But Seahawks are going to the Super Bowl, which I predicted all the way back to September 2013. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Brenda.
So I think we've got you through the end of the week for the Essence of Success Radio Network. We'll see you next week on Filmcology when we do, I believe, Pretty Ugly People.
Ooh.
And we'll just see you next week, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. This is Film Plus Psychology, Filmcology. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks, Linus.